One of the two certain things in life is change, and change is the one thing that levy payers constantly cope with in the fields or in the greenhouses and polytunnels. As if extreme weather, environmental issues in general, exiting the EU, policy changes for subsidies and direct payments, a pandemic, and changes in consumer behaviour weren't enough to drive anyone to distraction, I wonder who farmers and growers can look to for support to make sense of it all. Well, on this, and as far as I can tell, people seem to have opinions which occupy both ends of the scale about AHDB. Of course, there are many people in the middle of the extreme views who may be described as happy and content, perhaps even passive in their views about what they get in return for their levy payments. I don't want to do this group a disservice, as by all accounts, including regular surveys and questionnaires, they are in the majority. And then there are the vocal ones, passionate, noisy, and won't be deterred. And therefore, a bit like Marmite, you love it or you live in Australia where it's not available. If any of that resonates, that's just the reaction I was after. Thank you and keep listening. As in this podcast, we meet the man at the helm, the new chairman of the main AHDB board, an appointee of the Secretary of State, and quite possibly the guy, according to some people, has one of the most unenviable jobs in agriculture. I'm John Bates, and I'm talking to the man who took on the role of chairman just a few weeks ago, Nicholas Saphir. Thanks for sparing the time to chat, Nicholas. Let's start with the past. For the benefit of the listeners who don't know you, please share some of your career history and background.
Well, first of all, John, what a great introduction. I'm actually almost scared of answering any questions now. Okay, where do I come from? I'm a lawyer by training. I went into family fruit and vegetable business a long time ago, turned it into a public company, which went into food manufacturing and farming. I sold the business in 92-93 and worked for the acquiring company, and I involved myself pretty much around the world globally in farming in South America, Southern Africa, Europe and the UK, and food manufacturing. Left them in 95-96 and did a whole variety of things, including for the last 18 years, chairing the organic milk producers, OMSCO, which is now the second largest dedicated organic milk pool in the world, with exports to places like Australasia and China and the United States. I also have a small startup, probably one of the longest startups in the world. It's been going for a long time, breeding apple varieties, but specifically looking at phytonutrients. I'm also an investor in and on the board of a Spanish company that's the largest producer of fruit and exporter of fruit from Spain. So broad experience of horticulture. I've also farmed arable crops, quite a large potato grower, and I've also kept beef and sheep. So fairly broad. While all that was going on commercially, I started when I was quite young, I suppose in my early 30s, chairing the Central Council for Agriculture Horticulture Cooperation for what was then MAF, then went on and created Food from Britain. And I've done a whole variety of things, like write papers for the government on the future of food distribution in the Southeast, particularly the London wholesale markets, as well as a paper with John Marsh on productivity. So that's where I come from. One of the things I could bring to this particular role is I've actually lived, in a farming sense, I've lived in the non-protected global world, and I've seen real volatility. We've actually, in the UK, experienced, for a whole variety of reasons, some 50 years of comparative stability. It may not feel like it to all the farmers, but it has been comparatively stable. And we're about to enter into a world, as you quite rightly described, that actually adds more complexity to the complexities we all face farming today.
So from your history, clearly you enjoy, or you've got challenges in your DNA. You obviously quite like to deal with challenges. Is that the thing really that spurred you on to tip your hat in the ring to be chairman of AHDB?
No, not really. I think that I've always had a passionate view that we've got to find a way of consolidating the resources we have in the institutional side of British agriculture. I think the unions do a great job in representing farmers and lobbying. But I think that we really do have a lack of a consolidation in the centre other than AHDB that can better use resources. Now, that doesn't mean to say that the days of the Meat and Livestock Commission and the Milk Marketing Board and all of those organisations that gave birth to AHDB weren't good consolidators. But if you look at it today, the challenges we're going to face going forward are actually across sector. Of course, we have sector problems, we have sector issues. And you could say that the problem of sprout suppressants in potatoes is quite different from the problem of how do you sell more lamb. But if you look at the cross-sector activities that we're going to be looking at, if we're going to compete with imports and we're going to import and compete with opportunities in global markets, we need to do a hell of a lot more together in trying to find answers.
So you've been around AHDB for just a few short weeks. What are your first impressions?
Well, walk straight into COVID-19. So my first impressions were came in thinking strategically and ended up very quickly having to deal with the tactics of a crisis. Reaction to the way AHDB has performed in the last 12 weeks, I have to say I was deeply impressed. I am deeply impressed. I've used AHDB services in the past, mainly as an exporter, but had never really recognised the depth and the services that really were available in AHDB. Now, that's a criticism as much as it is a compliment, in the sense that on the outside, I didn't realise that much of the statistics I was using in looking at markets, much of the information I was using in terms of productivity emanated from AHDB. And we've got a really interesting problem there. And COVID-19 actually catapulted AHDB visibly into the centre of a lot of activity. And I think that's a lesson. I mean, it's worth just spending a couple of minutes on COVID-19. Clearly, if I take the first crisis was the closing down of hospitality and the problem with the dairy industry, and several bottlers were unable to take the milk and milk was being poured down the drain. And there was an immediate issue around the unions saying that there was a disaster and government saying, well, we need evidence. And when you look for independent evidence, where do you go? And it's AHDB. We are not government. We are not a representational organization. We have an extremely strong and experienced information service. And so we were deputed to go away, work with Dairy UK, and really find out what was going on. We're just coming into flush. It was spring. Catering was closed. What was going to happen? And we did I think, remarkably good job in a matter of only about 3 weeks in proving that the crisis was not a crisis, that there were people who were terribly disadvantaged in having to pour milk away. But essentially, the real problem was that we needed to do two things. We needed to show farmers that pumping the tail of the cow to produce more milk just to make up for lower prices was not sensible, when marginal costings actually made it quite clear that it wasn't the right way to go. And we persuaded with Dairy UK, we persuaded the manufacturers, the bottlers, to inform farmers by introducing B quotas, etc. And that dampened this rush to produce more milk. We as AHDB put out podcasts and advisories on how to better cope with that. And also we put together a promotional fund with the industry, with DEFRA, with the devolved authorities, to promote particularly liquid milk consumption at a time of close down. And suddenly we find, no, the dairy farmers are not getting phenomenal returns. But if you compare what's going on in Europe or what's going on in America with what's happened here, it's been handled, I think, extremely well right across the board. And the centerpiece of that handling of it was the evidence that we as AHDB provided. You then look at the carcass balancing problem around beef that came about because of the lack of catering markets. And again, it was actually being able to identify the issue and to do something about that in terms of promotional work, that with the devolved authorities, with the ring fence funds, we were able to promote best cuts of beef. And suddenly we have a beef market that is fairly stable, doing reasonably well. And then the next one was the labour shortage. And we were deputed to put up the workings for the website on a call for picking. And I think that was done well. So that the whole experience for me in the first 12 weeks was faced with a crisis, faced with an immediate need. There were skills and abilities within, and dedication within AHDB. It was quite surprising. I mean, I say it's quite surprising coming from the outside. Then of course, we have to, while all that's going on, return to the other issue that you quite rightly say in your introduction. We're looking at Brexit, whatever that may mean. We're looking at trade agreements, whatever that may mean. We're looking at changes in farm payments, which we have a clearer view on. So we're looking at a new world post-January 2021 that is going to be extremely destabilizing, very worrying for farmers, and is going to actually start creating issues around those farmers who want to change, those farmers who don't want to change, and those farmers who feel they can't change because they don't have the right inputs. Now, I think AHDB has got a responsibility to deal with all of those issues. And it isn't simply about saying, let's improve productivity, meaning let's produce more. Let's try and deal with the problem by getting more out of the same inputs. It's much more about understanding the reality of where the markets are going to be. What are the risks? What are the opportunities? I think AHDB has got a deep responsibility, probably a very unthanked responsibility, to hold up a mirror to the industry and say, look, this is the reality. You know, we may think we are the best in certain areas, but when we look at cost of production, when we look at the reality of the product, maybe we're not. We're not the best. Maybe we can't compete in certain areas in terms of pure commodity, and we have to find other alternatives. On the other hand, there are areas where we are the best. So I think that the first thing we need to do as AHDB, and taking the lessons from COVID-19, we need to produce the evidence for farming that says, look, this is the reality. This is where we're fantastic. This is where we've got an issue. This is where we have risks and opportunities. So our strategy going forward has got to actually be able to increase, support, resource that independent evidence base. And from there, to actually create business plans, projects that are going to support British farming to actually deal with those issues. And you have to recognize we're talking about, I mean, in horticulture alone, 200 odd crops. If you take field vegetables, potatoes, cereals, you're talking about a whole lot of crops. You're talking about many different issues and at the same time, many commonalities. So if you take field crops, you're talking about the issues around soil regeneration. You're talking about the problem of carbon neutrality. You're talking about the loss of many synthetic inputs, particularly pesticides and herbicides. Some of those are common. We have to work on that together. If you talk about the animal protein market, particularly beef and lamb, you're talking about, in beef terms, probably a market that is going to go through change if we do a trade agreement with America. If we don't do a trade agreement with Europe, then the Irish beef will be a problem coming in. So beef in this market could be very good, but there will be opportunities to export. If you take lamb, if we don't do a deal with Europe, then we've got problems in lamb, but we've got opportunities in America if we do the trade agreement. So very complex. And I think it's absolutely incumbent on AHDB to position itself to be able to provide the evidence and help farmers deal with that complexity.
Nicholas, you've made reference there to the new strategy. So you've had some involvement with the crafting of that. Are you in a position to tell us anything about that? I understand it's due to go before the board this month, July.
Well, it's been an iterative process. And if you think that, I mean, it started way before I came. And it's gone on despite COVID-19. And the board has been engaged right the way through. So it's not going to the board at the end of July. It's another iteration that will go to the board with amendments. And I'm hoping that by the end of July, internally, the board, management we'll have come to a conclusion as to where we wish to go in terms of strategy, and then we'll go out for consultation during August and September, recognizing that August and September are not a great time to go out for consultation. We're right in the middle of harvest, so we've got to manage that process as well. But we will be consulting, yeah.
Now, I'm interested in that, because that consultation, is that in order to get buy-in, or is that to silence the critics, or both?
That's a really interesting question. I think that if you've gone through months of thinking and iteration, what comes out at the other end, hopefully, is both credible and robust. I've always said, if you take me as an individual, I'll be very robust in my views, but I will always listen to counterarguments. And I think that's exactly where we are. I'm hoping that the document comes out, it's credible and robust. That does not mean by any means that it's a done deal. It's going to be there for people to talk about, to shoot at, to come back, I hope, with positive and creative answers to some of the issues, not just destructive. We do have an ability in agriculture. You made a point in your introduction. There are many types of people in agriculture. People farm for different reasons. It's probably a unique industry in the sense that there are many people out there who don't do it for profit at all. They do it because it's a lifestyle. And the question is, will they be able to do that and for how long? That's another question. But there are other people who are sensible and commercial and want answers. And there are a few people who have very strong views, which they carried for a long time. And one of the problems is that some of them will find it quite difficult to understand the change that's going to hit us. So I think we're going to get a whole mix of answers to this strategy paper. We're going to get people who will just accept it as it is. There'll be those who come back with very important views and suggestions. And there will be some people who actually just don't like it. And we'll have to sift our way through that.
You mentioned the fact that in the past you've used bits of the services that AHDB provides, perhaps on occasions unknowingly. Would part of your plan for the future be for AHDB to be more visible?
For sure. I think it is a disservice to AHDB if it is not visible. I think it's a disservice to the team who actually put an enormous amount of work and then see their work popping up all over the place under somebody else's name, if you like. I think that they deserve recognition for the work they do. And when you come to the request for views, which I think was very important, one of the things I'm quite clear about is that our engagement with the levy payers, with the farming community, has not really given them a total view over the years as to just how important HDB's work's been. Having said that, I also think that it's pretty important that we actually still have that credible, independent voice rather than a promotional voice. We are not out there just promoting HDB. That would be crazy. And the other thing you'll see from a strategy is that if you look at the landscape of British farming, it has got so many players institutionally, so much waste of resource by people overlapping activity, that one of the things AHDB has got to do, and is doing very well, historically has done it well, is partner with people. It's actually through partnering and bringing people together that we'll better use the resources that are available and produce value for farmers.
The evidence that you made reference to that was produced by AHDB to support some of the issues that dairy farming was facing in recent weeks, I wonder, just from a listener's perspective, I wonder if you can give us a bit of an insight into how important that evidence is in influencing organisations like DEFRA and you know, some of the policy makers and decision makers.
Tangent. I've spent the last 2 years negotiating with the Americans on a post-Brexit world on organic regulation. You will know that the British government has not been able to negotiate with the Americans because of Article 50 until we leave and all the rest of it. And so I spent time in Washington to make sure that we at OMSCO, as I was then there, had ability to continue to get into the American market. The USDA and the American Marketing Services, which is part of USDA, is a really effective instrument for American farmers in terms of particularly home market, but also exports. Lovely comment from them was they use AHDB statistics all the time to understand what's going on, not just in the UK market, but generally the outlook papers, etc. Now that's a compliment. That's a real compliment because the Americans are, the USDA is pretty good at producing reviews and outlook papers. You will see in the strategy, and if I lift the veil just a little bit on the strategy, you'll see that evidence is right in the middle of what we are saying needs to be done. We need to have the resources to be able to produce across the board real evidence as to where the bottlenecks are, where the long-term opportunities are, where the risks are.
It does sound as though we're looking to appeal more and speak directly to what I refer to perhaps as the silent majority. Those are the people who seem to get great benefit. They see huge value in working closely with AHDB, and they're happy with the return that they get for their levy. Are there any specific messages you might have for that group of people?
If you look at the request for views, and I would say one of the shames to me coming in is that the request for views actually did not produce enormous numbers of views. The views were quite clear. I think they could be teased apart. But I think one thing is it will be good to get that silent majority vocal. And I don't mean vocal in terms of complaining, but vocal in terms of participating in every sense. And I think one of the things you will see, not just from the strategy, but from the business plans that then flow from that strategy, is that we have got to get much, much closer to engaging people on the ground more in the work of AHDB. I don't think that's totally an AHDB problem. I think that, as I said to you, we've been through 50 years of being able to, in a comparative sense, make a choice as farmers, whether we wish to engage, did not to engage, whether we wish to push for high yields, high productivity, high profits, or just live a lifestyle. I think we're coming to the end of some of that. And I think that when I say that silent majority, I hope they do engage, it's because I think they're gonna have to look at some of the answers. And I hope AHDB can provide at least the tools, if not all the answers, to allow them to do that. But don't just think about the silent majority. I mean, I can think of sectors within the industry, horticulture, pigs, where actually you've got considerable consolidation already. And those people are still pretty supportive of AHDB. And ask yourself why. And I think the answer to that is, if you think of a silent majority, the silent majority is often about business tools. It's about how do you find a marketplace for lamb? How do you find a marketplace for balancing carcasses on beef? If you take the consolidated industries, which are very capable of doing their own marketing in some respects, I'll come back to that. They have other issues, like, for example, pesticides and herbicides is an enormous problem. Like with potatoes, as I said to you, sprout suppressants. Individual firms can't solve those problems. We've got to find a way, and we have. I mean, AHDB has done this in the past and will continue to do it, to consolidate the resources to allow these issues to be dealt with quickly in terms of finding answers. But coming back to the point I made, even where the industries are consolidated, take pigs. Very small number of key players in the pigs industry. And yet AHDB plays a real role in exports. So, for example, we pay 80% of the only commercial counsellor in British embassies around the world that is dedicated to agricultural product. I mean, that's crazy when we look at how many. I mean, I have a friend, an American friend who was head of USDA London, who is now posted in Moscow. And I said to him, but America bans exports to Russia. What are you doing with an agricultural councillor in Moscow? And the answer was preparing for the future. Now, if you think we, AHDB, are paying for 80% of a councillor in Peking, that is dealing with the potential. We've really got to understand, and for the pigs industry, that's really important. And we're going to have a veterinary officer in Asia to deal with all of the crises. And you look at the crises around the pigs industry, having a veterinary officer there is pretty important. So even if an industry as consolidated as pigs can see a real role for AHDB in a certain area, then you can imagine what the opportunity is going to be, for example, for having a commercial counsellor in Washington that is helping the dairy industry or helping the beef industry. So I think that we have a role to play both for the silent majority and for the very consolidated industries. But it's not one size fits all. And I think there where HDB has been good in the past, and I think we've got to get it even better, is to actually recognise that actually we are not a centrist organisation that produces one answer. We've actually got to be able to work at farm level and with the industry in finding different answers for different problems.
Nicholas, these are early days in your tenure, and I just wonder, perhaps in conclusion, whether you can give us a bit of an insight into the next few years and perhaps what success looks like as far as you're concerned.
Not good at being a prophet. the next few years. Okay, here's a certainty. It's going to be volatile. I remember a few years ago talking to the chief executive of Dairy Farmers of America, and he said, you have no idea what volatility is like. You have been protected so well, but wait till you hit the real world. So first view, it's going to be volatile. We've got to be fast on our feet. That's what point one. Point two, we're heading for a world where consumers are going to be quite difficult to read. We're going to have enormous numbers of consumers for the next few years who are actually going to find it quite difficult to afford luxuries, for sure. There's going to be unemployment for some time. There's going to be pressures around on demands. But at the same time, we have a lot of people who are used to eating good quality food, and there'll be an opportunity for that. The other point I would make about it is that we are going to be subject to uncertainty in terms of trade agreements and in terms of both imports and exports. So we've got to be pretty quick in understanding markets. That's the first thing. We've got to understand the reality of markets. So it's no good saying that the growth of vegetarianism is a fad and it's going to go away. It isn't. So we've got to have, and HDB have been very good on this, we've got to have a lot of work done in terms of the credibility in the way in which we produce our food as Britain. We're going to have a lot of pressures around climate change and in terms of sustainability. Soil regeneration is going to be a very big issue, not just because it's right, but also because public goods is going to be paid for that sort of thing as well. So I think that from the first answer to your question is, we better understand the pressures, we better understand the changes that are coming, and we better understand that there is no certainty that they will change. I think we've got to make sure that we resource research to deal with the inevitable. And the inevitable is going to be the reduction and loss of chemical inputs, fertilizers, herbicides, pesticides, suppressants, bacterial protection, antibiotics. These are going to go through a revolution over the next 5 to 10 years. And the industry has got to have a home that can consolidate the work that's done on that. And we've got to do that. That's an AHDB function that we've really got to perform. And also the other important feature is skills. We actually have a skills problem in this industry. We have a generation that is retiring that actually got its skills through personal experience. We have a younger generation that's going to come in that can't just work on personal experience, because the data that's going to be available is going to be immense. The technical requirements are going to be considerable. We've got to find ways of upgrading the skills in the industry. Go back to your introduction. Highly complex. Very challenging. I see AHDB as ideally placed and with a credibility and a history that says they can do it, but it's going to be a challenge. a challenge for all of us on the board and staff and farmers to engage.
Nicholas, thank you very much for sharing your thoughts. I hope perhaps you'll come back another day and do another podcast with us.
With pleasure.
I hope you found that discussion with AHDB's new chairman enlightening. If you've got any feedback or ideas for other podcasts, we'd love to hear from you via the AHDB website, ahdb.org.uk. It could not be simpler. Thank you to podcast producer Isa Shepman. Stay safe, stay well. I'm John Bates. Thanks for listening.